Good morning, everybody. This is, I'll call the meeting to order for the State Government Finance and Election Committee for Friday, March 4th, 2022. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. Mr. Brinks, can you please take the roll?
Yes, thank you. Chair Nelson.
I am here.
Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Present.
Nash is present. Representative Bonner. Representative Joskowski.
Present.
Joskowski is present. Representative Elkins will be a few minutes late. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman is present. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne present.
Cleburne is present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick present.
Kosnick's present. Representative Mason.
Mason present.
Mason is present. Representative New Brindley.
Present.
New Brindley is present. Representative Pulowski.
Pulowski present.
Pulowski is present. Representative Quam.
Present.
Quam is present. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Bonner is present. Chair, we have a quorum.
Quorum is present. First order of business is approval of the minutes from yesterday's meeting. Representative Carlson, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I sure did, Mr. Chair, and I move to approve the minutes.
Representative Carlson moved approval of the minutes from March 3rd, 2022. All in favor, if you want to unmute and say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, we've got four bills on the committee on the agenda today. And the first one we have is House File 2919. Representative Hewitt, I'll move that House File 2919 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Hewitt, I see you have an amendment. You want to explain what the amendment does?
Mr. Chair, I do. The amendment, I got to find my notes here. Was in my total overall for that thing. The author's amendment clarifies the administrative authority of the board of to reinstate an expired license.
Everyone who wants to unmute, all in favor, I'll move the amendment, the A22-0340 amendment. Everyone who wants to unmute to move approval of the amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author wants. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Bill's in the shape you want. Representative Hewitt, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's so nice to be back in front of your committee this year. House File 2919 repeals a section of Chapter 326A that requires the Board of Accountancy to automatically revoke a CPA licensee that is expired for 2 years. The changes will not affect the Board's current authority to revoke a licensee for cause, and an expired license could still be revoked through due process in an administrative hearing. An expired licensee would still need to pay the renewal fee and complete the continuing ads before an active license would be issued. The changes in House File 2919 would allow this to be done administratively rather than a board hearing. If a current licensed CPA violates a statute, they are provided due process through an investigation and hearing and have options to repeal the board's decision. House File 2919 would provide the same process for an individual who simply fails to renew their license, but currently faces a much harsher penalty with no due process. Today I have with me Mr. Gino Fragnito of for the Government Relations for the Board of Minnesota Society of CPAs. He can go into more depth here, and Mr. Chair, I'd like him to just kind of give us a summary here.
I've got two testifiers listed. The first one is Gino Fragnito, I think is how I say it, but I hope I didn't butcher too bad. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gino Fragnito from the Minnesota CPA Society, and you did pronounce it correct. Representative Hewitt has done a good job of summarizing what House File 2919 does, that we're looking to repeal a section of law that requires the board to automatically revoke a license that has not been renewed and simply expired. And the board may do that without currently following the procedures in Chapter 14. This would just allow the individual the same ability to appeal and go through the process that Chapter 14 allows for any license sanction, and would put the expired license, I think, on an equal level playing field with what a individual who, if somebody right now is involved in malfeasance, they're allowed the due process, they go through a hearing, they are allowed to appeal it, potentially all the way up to the district court. So by repealing this section of law, we're simply allowing those who just failed to renew their license that opportunity to reinstate that license by going through the administrative process, paying the fees, and the continuing education that would be required, as Representative Hewitt said. So it's, I think, an easy bill, and just creates some parity, and also allows people the opportunity to, you know, pursue a profession without an artificial barrier for simply not renewing a license. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Fragnito. I also have Dylan Lang on my list. Mr. Lang, we want to introduce yourself for the committee and then proceed with your tape, with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. My name is Dylan Lang. I am the investigator for the Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architecture, Geoscience, and Interior Design. I also serve the Board of Accountancy through an interagency agreement. And on behalf of the Board of Accountancy, we just want to say that we support this legislation and appreciate your efforts. We believe this is a positive for both the board and for certificate holders in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Members, any questions of this really controversial bill? I'm seeing no hands jumping up. I will renew my motion that House File 2919, as amended, be referred to the General Register. Mr. Brinks, do you want to take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner. Representative Joskowski.
Aye.
Joskowski votes aye. Representative Elkins. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pulowski.
Pulowski votes aye.
Pulowski votes aye. Representative Plum.
Aye.
Plum votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Chair, with a vote of 12 ayes, the motion prevails.
12 ayes, 0 nays, the motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, and hope to see you soon. Next bill we have on our agenda is House File 3682, Representative Pulowski. Representative Mason, there's a division report from the local government. Do you want to move the division report?
I so move.
Representative Mason moves the division report. Members, you want to unmute. All in favor of the division report, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The division report's been approved. I'll move House File 3682 to be referred to the General Register. Welcome to the committee, Representative Pulowski. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always good to be back on the committee I'm on. House File 3682 is an update and modernization of Chapters 331A. 331A have the basic rules governing publication of public notices in Minnesota. It's been about 30 years since we've updated this section of law, And of course, since then, we've had the digital revolution. So what this does is synchronize the distribution of public notices in both print and digital formats, and that the public notice disseminated in a digital format is a valid form of publication. The Newspaper Association has worked with the local units of government, and I thank them for their all of their work in putting this bill together. Mark Anfinson is here. He, I believe, wants to say a few words in reference to the bill, and that's where we are at, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Chair Kapolowski. I have Mr. Anfinson. You want to introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. My name is Mark Anfinson. I am the attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. I had a hand in drafting this bill, as you might guess. I'll be pretty brief here. I just want to focus on the fact that the bill looks at the dissemination of public notices. It doesn't change any current public notices. It doesn't add any new public notices. Its concentration is on how notices are disseminated. The current structure of Chapter 331A requires that a newspaper in which public notices appear must have some geographical proximity to who's publishing the notice. And of course, that makes good sense. It's more likely to be seen by people if the newspaper is an area newspaper. But the criteria in the statute that are used for determining which newspapers qualify in terms of proximity have become clunky and outmoded because of the digital changes and the changes in the newspaper industry. And so by proposing, as the bill does, some new definitions and rules regarding how the location of the newspaper is determined where notices are to appear, the bill would make it considerably easier for government bodies and others to properly and efficiently publish their public notices. The bill was originally prompted by a call I received about a year and a half ago from the MSBA, the School Boards Association, and their members were apparently having some issues around the state with locating the proper newspaper. And so they asked us if we'd work with them to modernize the law. We were happy to do that. We proceeded. Over the last several months, we've talked to most of the groups that represent local public bodies and that publish public notices. And at this point, there seems to be pretty general agreement that the bill, if enacted, would improve the current statute in terms of how to decide where to publish public notices. The bill summary that has been prepared for you by House Research is very good. I'm not going to attempt to repeat that. I'll simply conclude by saying that I'm happy to go into more detail if members would like me to, or to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Anfinson. There's also a Patrick Hines here to answer questions if there are any. Members, any questions of the testifier or of the author? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, Chair Pawlowski. When I was mayor here in Waconia, I heard from our staff that it would be easier to publish things online to get more people. But my concern then was, would we be avoiding notifying people by moving to an online only? But this is a hybridized. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, yes, it is.
Kapolowski.
And the online is, of course, open to the public and free. The notices are accessible free online. So,
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's that's what I wanted to make sure, is that this provided more transparency as opposed to less transparency, because I don't know how many times when I was mayor I heard from people, oh, I didn't know that meeting was happening. And the public notification process is a good one, and making it easier by making it electronic, I think, is a good idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Nash, that's been a concern I've had over the years too. My mother whispering in my ear, she never had a computer, didn't want to have a computer, and there's still a large group of people out there that don't have computers, and if it's just online, then you're cutting out people that may or may not, I mean, that read the newspapers but don't have computers or don't have internet access. Representative Mason, you have a question.
Actually, it was a comment, and you and Representative Nash have kind of covered it. as you said, there are a number of people that do not have computers, or, and even while they can have access at the library, many still will not do that. So it is important that we maintain the written word. And then the other point that I wanted to ensure is the fact that both the written and the internet or digital notices come before the meeting. I just didn't want one. I didn't want one to replace the other. So everything is done before the meeting, no matter how they access their information.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Chair Pawlowski, if you want to wrap up your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For those of us that still have paper newspapers, as we do in Winona, I have a weekly and then I also have a daily, and both of them are also online. This clarification is a big help in understanding how to access information.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. See no further questions. So members, Mr. Brinks, please take the roll.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam votes aye. Chair, with a vote of 13 ayes, the motion prevails.
13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. Next, we have House File 3870, Representative Greenman. And I'll make the motion to refer House File 3870 to the Ways and Means Committee. And Representative Greenman, I see you have an amendment. You want to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment adds the appropriation amount of $5 million and reflects feedback that I got from the Secretary of State, from Representative Nash, and others in tailoring this grant program. So I'd ask we adopt the amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd like.
I'll move the A2 amendment. Everybody want to unmute? All in favor, please, of the A2 amendment? Please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Representative Greenman, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am pleased to present House File 3870, the bill to provide local grants to enhance election security and training. We are hearing House File 3666 next, and both bills are intended to address the rising security issues targeting our election workers and local elections administration. In the interest of efficiency, I'll save most of my remarks about the problems of rising threats and fears for my presentation in the next bill. But I will say that briefly, and unfortunately, in recent years, we've seen increasingly tense political environment, aggressive rhetoric, and social media has involuntarily thrust our elections officials and local elections administrators into the public spotlight. And this has increased concerns about security for our workers and our elections administration. In Minnesota, we have a proud tradition of elections administration administered at the local level. In all of our 87 counties and hundreds of cities and townships play the critical role of administering our elections, and it's important that we provide the resources that they need to enhance their security. What this bill does is provide a grant program for updates that can increase the security of our local elections administration, including things like upgrading facilities to ensure that secure access and storage areas and buildings have the updated security and key locks and all of those things, installing security cameras to secure areas, providing trainings for election judges and staff on how to deal with potential conflicts. All of those things will be provided. Every local jurisdiction has different needs and different circumstances, and that's why this grant program is set up to help them decide what they need for their facilities and their polling places and to keep their folks secure and safe for our elections. The program is set up to ensure that every county has access to a $30,000 grant to ensure the upgrades that they need and the training that they would feel useful. And knowing that some jurisdictions have more voters and other locations, there's additional funding that will be allocated on a per voter basis. With that, Mr. Chair, I believe we have a few testifiers, and I'll turn it back to you.
I have two testifiers on my list. The first one is Michael Stahlberger. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Michael Stahlberger. I'm Director of Property and Environmental Resources in Blue Earth County, South Central Minnesota. My department is responsible for administering the elections for over 40,000 registered voters in the county, in addition to many other land and service-related functions. Today, I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of County Officials. MACO represents all 87 county auditors, treasurers, recorders, and finance officers, and under that umbrella, we would include our county elections administrators. In your packet today, you'll find a letter that expresses our association's support of House File 3666, which is the next bill, as well as the bill in front of you now, 3870, which appropriates the funding for elections associated expenses. We're proud to be collaborating on that letter of support with the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Association of Townships, and the League of Minnesota Cities to support those bills. And that fact is important to me because it shows the common position our four associations have related to the importance of having the resources and tools and mechanisms that we need to further invest in the security of our election system statewide. I'd want to dive a little bit more specifically into the detail of how that funding that would be provided in the bill would actually provide the assistance that we need for physical security of our polling places in our elections offices, but also further enhance the physical security of the system as a whole. What the bill does, in our opinion, is it provides us access to resources that we'll need statewide to protect our election workers, our equipment, and also the activities that we're going to be doing throughout the election cycle, all in an attempt to increase voter confidence in the process in its entirety. Most importantly for me, though, and for our association, is that we appreciate that the bill recognizes that local role that elections officials play in the security process by giving funding to the local level for training, especially training for our elections officials and election judges. Our election judges are on the ground volunteers or paid at a very low rate for the work they're doing, and they serve in our polling places and on our ballot boards across the state. If we can provide them with additional resources and training, we can add yet another layer of protection to the security of our election. It will provide those judges with tools that will help them secure the polling place on election day, help them maintain the security of our election records, and also provide some added security for the election equipment and the systems that are in use in the polling places and at the ballot board process. I look forward to having that training provide additional confidence and reassurance to our election judges as well. That will help us with recruitment and retaining our judges. My colleagues and myself specifically are aware of the challenges we have in recruiting judges and then also retaining them every 2 years. And so any measure that can help us provide some reassurance to our judges will be well received by county officials. We also welcome the opportunity to provide them with some specific training that will help them handle the situations and circumstances they might face in the polling places across the state, as that is the backbone for our election system. Thanks so much for the opportunity to speak today on behalf of MACO. If the chair and the committee would like it, I can discuss specific ways counties would use those funds to provide some additional security enhancements. Otherwise, I'll conclude my testimony with this, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stahlberger. And we'll hang around for questions. I've already got two hands up. And the next person on my list is Nicole Freeman from the Office of the Secretary of State. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, Representative Freeman. My name is Nicole Freeman, and I'm the Government Relations Director for the Secretary of State, Steve Simon. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 3870. This bill provides $5 million in grant funding that the Office of the Secretary of State will distribute to counties, cities, and townships to enhance physical security of election offices, polling places and provide reimbursement for preparing materials or training to election judges in fiscal year 2023. The county is eligible for a grant of no less than $30,000 under this bill, and then remaining grant funds must be distributed based on citizen voting age population to each of the political subdivisions within that county. So 80% of those will go to the political subdivisions of the remaining funds, and 20% can go to the counties. The grant funding will support local administrators as they look for ways to modernize and shore up their cyber and physical security needs in the year ahead. Several jurisdictions have recently engaged in a physical security audit provided by the Department of Homeland Security. And those audits have provided local jurisdictions with a list of projects and improvements that can help harden the physical security of their buildings and daily business practices. This grant funding would relieve some of the local cost to those jurisdictions for those improvements. Other jurisdictions have identified varied needs to firm up their physical security or train staff and election judges. As Michael Stahlberger from MACO mentioned, this training will assist with election judge recruitment as well as retention. The Office of the Secretary of State urges support of this additional funding so local jurisdictions have the resources necessary to make these physical security improvements. With that, Chair, I am happy to take questions and hang around.
Thank you, Ms. Nicole. Ms. Freeman. Representative Nash, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author or the testifiers, I certainly understand that some may think that there is an issue. And I had asked the author when she stopped by my office to provide me an example of something that would need to be mitigated. And I don't believe at the time, Representative Greenman, you had an example. I have since also spoken to my own county's election folks, and they have assured me that there were no examples of anything that had happened. So can you tell me of a specific example of something that happened that these funds would go to mitigate? Because, I appreciated you stopping by, but I'm still not convinced that this is something that we need to do, particularly with $5 million. And then, Mr. Chair, I'll have a follow-up question.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash. And I think a piece of the conversation that you're referring to is actually about the bill that we're going to hear next, the relating to actually creating some legal parameters around incidents targeting election officials and election workers. And we can talk about that. I think that on this piece, and particularly this bill, it is about as much about modernizing. And I think we actually heard in this testimony some of the needs. But I did actually ask for a list, and I might turn over to our testifiers too. But things like installing and requiring key card access to buildings and to places where secure elections machinery is stored. We heard about, and I think particularly when we talk about the rising fear that we're seeing, and we saw in some of the letters about incidences of sort of heated behavior at the polls. One of the things we need to prevent some of the stuff that we're seeing in other states is actually a uniform response and making sure that head election judges and election judges know what is permissible and what isn't and how to deal with it. And that training, hopefully we will do and work with to ensure that we have it before we see some of the incidences that we have had happen in other states. I don't want to wait in Minnesota to see the types of incidents we've seen at polling places in terms of obstructing access, the death threats that we've seen, and we can talk about them, and I have some examples about it for the next bill, which I think is more relevant. But in this case, what this grant is, it's a one-time appropriation in a moment where we have a $9 billion surplus, and I think we often talk about counties and how counties how we should, as the state, make sure that we're not, that we are supporting counties and their job and their local job as election administrators. And I think that this does this. It's reasonable. And I think that from your feedback in that conversation, I think it is really important that every county in the state, regardless of how big they are, has needs that we should be investing in. And that's why it was set up that way. So I appreciate the question, and I don't know if maybe I could turn it over to Mr. Stolberger or to Ms. Freeman to sort of talk a little bit more about the needs that this appropriation could help in terms of security and training.
And I think Mr. Stolberger at the end of his testimony said he had some examples. So Mr. Stolberger.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenman. First off, I'll start out. Our association has initiated a survey to our membership to try to collect some of the very information that Representative Nash and Representative Greenman are looking for here, because we are approaching this bill as providing funding for some of those physical security enhancements, as well as doing some proactive training of election judges. So let me just take a little bit of time to break those two categories down. On the physical security side, I'll use Blue Earth County as the example, since that's the one that I obviously would know the most about. We are already preparing ourselves for 2022. And so as part of that process, we're doing a physical security review of our structures, our buildings, our systems. And we're also doing the same thing on the cybersecurity front. And so when we look at just the security components for physical spaces, we've identified buildings, rooms in our historic courthouse that are accessed by a key. And while we can do chain of custody and record logs for entrances and whatnot, adding another layer of security, such as an actual key card access that will electronically record that, provides us just one extra piece of security for that space that would allow us to better maintain the actual security of our ballots or any other materials that are going to be stored in those spaces. Some of the other things that we would be looking at from our needs assessment would be adding a second layer of security to our equipment related to elections. So our tabulators, for example, are already locked up when they're stored away and not in use, but actually having them in a second storage container or storage cage allows us to add yet another barrier, another level of protection for securing the election. So those are a couple of examples. Security cameras have been mentioned as well, so we can keep a video record of access to rooms and what's happening in there. Those are examples. If I switch over to the training side of it, though, we have had in Blue Earth County judges that have expressed interest in and concern, to be frank, in how to handle situations where they might need to de-escalate or handle a conflict in the polling place. And so we would really look forward to having the ability to provide that training. And in Blue Earth County's instances, being able to bring in a resource who can help us provide that training in a way that's going to be most effective. I can train on the laws of elections. I can train on practices related to Blue Earth County. But I myself am not an expert in those matters, and so it would be good for us to be able to do something there that would be a little bit more holistic and add some value for our election judges. Some of the ideas we've shared is actually having that come through some sort of a statewide program so we have some consistency across the polling places throughout the state. So, Mr. Chair, those are a couple of examples. I don't want to ramble on for you. I can obviously go to more detail, but hopefully that provides some clarity for you and for Representative Nash.
Thank you. Being concise is very helpful, Mr. Stolberger. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just get back to my initial question. I still have not heard a specific example that we can refer to. I certainly understand that there are fears, but we're being asked to appropriate $5 million to address something that we still have not heard a specific example of. Beyond that, and I guess my next question is, isn't this largely what HAVA money is supposed to go towards? And perhaps I could go to fiscal staff or Representative Greenman, but I believe that HAVA money does cover a lot of what has just been asked. And then I have one last follow-up, and it'll be very brief.
I guess that Representative Greenman, either that or we could go to Ms. Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was going to – I know that the most recent round of grants have all been appropriated. I was going to go to Ms. Freeman because I think she'll have a more accurate answer. Thank you.
Ms. Freeman, you heard the question?
Sure, yes. So the latest round of HAVA grants that were appropriated for cybersecurity needs and physical security have been distributed by our office. And as the other testifiers have mentioned, there still are needs out there. We're still hearing from local jurisdictions that there are needs out there. So this would be another funding mechanism for those needs a little more specifically. Yep.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question is the question every time we hear the word grant, I ask, how much is the organization going to be peeling off? So to the Secretary of State representative, how much in administrative fees percentage-wise will you be taking off top of this $5 million if it becomes law to administer the grants?
Ms. Freeman.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nelson and Representative Nash. The office won't be taking any of this grant funding to administer the grants. As an office, we administer other grants that have been appropriated by the legislature. And so we're just going to roll in and absorb that cost into our existing grant administration.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman. Representative Kosnick, I see your hands is up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had similar concerns as Representative Nash. I'm looking for a little bit more clarity on the actual physical security that was discussed in line 1.3, but what is, can you give us some examples? You got line 1.12 that talks about other activities to improve security. It's a little broad, and I always have a little concern when there's more ambiguity in legislation. Can you give us, what is the intent of line 1.2? What is other activities to improve security referencing? Either to, well, to the author first.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. And I think as we heard mentioned, there's both physical pieces, there's cyber issues, and then there's also training issues. And so I think that this line, and again, it is tailored to just to improve security. And so I think that that is both pretty clear in terms of the language as well as in terms of the delineation.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have a little bit of concern on the grant. Is there a base appropriation to a jurisdiction and then it goes to voter per capita voter, or is it just straight per capita voter? Because obviously there's different size of jurisdictions where there should, if you're gonna do this right, there should be at least a base amount. Otherwise just on a per voter, spreading it out across the state, some jurisdictions are going to lose out and have a maybe get some grant, but it's going to be insufficient to actually do the intent of your bill. And then on the training that was mentioned, I think I heard the answer, but maybe you can clarify. You're looking to create a new program to train, or are you working off of an existing election judge training that you would implement? Or I think I heard you say you're going to create a whole new program, a new curriculum per se, and what would that involve? Or is there an existing program that you're going to roll out that's used also?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And let me start with the first question you asked, because that's actually what this amendment did. And it was on both the feedback of the Secretary of State and Representative Nash. The bill provides a minimum of $30,000 that each of the 87 counties can write a grant for, recognizing, and I agree with you, that all of our counties and needs, they're going to have different needs, but they all are administering elections and have needs. And so that is the first piece. And then on top of that, there's resources per population. So those are sort of the two ways that we're ensuring that there is a base level of funding for every county, and then that there's and there's also, I'd say, resources for both counties, and we know that some local jurisdictions also may need these upgrades, so that's there too. On the second piece, and I probably am going to turn this over to Secretary of State, but my understanding is, so we currently have an election judge training, and so I think in terms of the training going out, the actual physical time of it, I think I'm not sure if we need additional, in terms of the curriculum, as you talked about, I think that there's an acknowledgement that given what we're seeing in the last couple of years, there is more of a need to actually equip and prepare the folks on the ground with the tools and the resources that may not just be how to determine eligibility, and that would be new. Let me turn it over, I think, to Ms. Freeman to make sure that to further clarify.
Ms. Freeman, do we have an existing training program that, and this is just enhancing that, or is this a whole new program? I think is the question I heard from Representative Kosnick.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Nelson and Representative Kosnick. So we do have existing training protocols and a training program that the Secretary of State offers some guidelines and a election judge guide for local jurisdictions to use. We also do a train the trainer program at our county election administrator training, as we're required to in state statute. So this piece of helping equip, especially head election judges, with some tools to deal with any circumstances that might be a physical security threat within a polling location would be an area that I think is sort of touched on right now in a lot of jurisdictions. I know I previously administered elections in Washington County, and it was a question that we received frequently from head judges during our trainings of, you know, how would I deal with a situation like someone, you know, someone is upset because their name can't be found on the voter rolls, and well, they moved and they didn't update their registration, but they're upset. So what are some ways that I can kind of talk them through that? And some of it is helping them understand the best way to explain the situation to the voter, and other ways might be other sort of tactics to sort of calm things back down and bring the level, the temperature in the room back down when an incident might happen. So it would be a supplemental, you know, optional, because it's not required in state law, a tool that could be provided for election judges.
Okay, thank you,
to get an additional resource.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it looks like the physical security part needs a little bit of work, and I'm not very well aware that there's election training for the judges. I was more specific to the security that this bill attempts to address. I'll have some further questions about the voter security of the actual voter and some of the intimidation. So I think there's a valid discussion. I'm not sure that this bill, with the federal dollars that are also appropriated to the state, fits something that we still needs a little bit of more work, but I think the discussion is important. So thank you for that.
Representative Mason.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Over the years, I've had a lot of opportunities to watch our local election officials in action, both during the voting process and the counting process. And last year, because of all the controversy, I made it a point to constantly be in contact with our local officials, and the fact that we made it through with a safe, fair, and secure outcome, I just was totally relieved. My comment is, and the reason I was watching so very closely last year, is because of all the attacks, negative comments that were going on, that provided, I guess, some threats maybe to our local officials. And some of those attacks are continuing today. And I know our testifiers had mentioned recruitment. So my question is, given all of the controversy attacks that have been going on about our election process, and I know that many of our judges volunteer year after year, how much has this really impacted the local officials as far as morale and recruitment?
I think I'll give that to Mr. Stahlberger. He had mentioned something in his testimony. Mr. Stahlberger.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. That's a really good question, and it's hard for me to answer because I don't testify today trying to present myself as a victim or anything like that, because I signed up for the job. I'm passionate about what I do, and so I'm going to do it day in and day out. And that's what you're going to hear from elections officials across the state and from election judges across the state, to be honest with you. But what we heard in Blue Earth County is experienced head judges all the way down to folks who are showing up for the first time because they wanted to get involved in 2020 elections. And they were concerned with, what do I do if a voter continues to say that they need to be able to do something that's not allowed? You're telling me they can't wear a political campaign button in the polling place. What if they refuse to take that off? How do I handle that? And so we try to work through some of those situations and help them figure out how to de-escalate that. But that's the sort of training that we're looking for some assistance on. Another example that we would be looking for there is like during the early voting process, we had multiple voters who had concerns with the way that we were handling their envelopes and the way that we were processing their absentee votes. And while our staff and our election judges working that day did the best they could to respond to that, they just didn't feel empowered and trained enough to handle that. So multiple instances of that would come to me where I would need to try to de-escalate that situation, move folks around so we can continue the voting process and handle that. And so with that, again, I don't want to go too deep there. I can if you need me to, but I don't know if that's the where we're going with this. But what we're looking for is just trying to give some of those tools for our folks that are working in elections so that they can feel more empowered. To get specifically to your morale question there, I think all of those pieces are going to help us rebuild some of that morale so that folks don't feel completely exhausted or beaten in that process as they're trying to serve their communities and their neighborhoods as election judges or our staff who are working as elections officials.
Thank you.
Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask a little bit more about the improving physical security of polling places. I know I'm just wondering exactly how we would envision that happening. I know that the testimony given was referencing county space, the county auditor's office and those ballot locations. And while certainly I understand that to some extent, I mean, I know that I assume most county auditors function this way, perhaps not all, and maybe that is a lesson which I can be schooled this morning. But I know my county auditor's office is in my county building, and there is, it couldn't really be more secure. There are deputies stationed at the entrances of the building. You're not even allowed to enter without going through security. So it seems like our county offices are about as secure of buildings as we can get. And then, of course, the other physical polling places, at least in my community, are places like our senior center is usually used. A couple years ago, our fire station was used. Certainly schools are very common. And so I'm wondering, I mean, I understand the idea of, well, we could do even more, like add key card access to the locked room, the room that is already locked. We could add a locked cage within the locked room. Like, I understand what you're saying on that stuff, although it seems like pretty significant redundancies. And so I'm wondering, if you are envisioning this playing out at other polling places as well.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley. And I think what you described is when we think about sort of the varied needs, right, we're talking about some of them is different county buildings or different city buildings that handle elections have different. Some of them were built 100 years ago, and some of them are much more secure when we're talking about where election equipment is stored. But we're also talking about, and to your point, and this is meant to get at it, when something is in a senior center, for instance, maybe a piece of it is ensuring that there is folks who are monitoring the election equipment. There are stanchions and other things that help with line management and sort of the physical security and frankly, the security of folks in the building. I will turn it over to Ms. Freeman, because I know I have a long list of things that folks have been talking about. Part of the reason that this is set up as a grant program and is set up for counties and in some in local jurisdictions to apply for it is they know better than we do what their needs are. And as they modernize and upgrade and in some cases really respond to where we're at today, they can tell us, and that's what the grant program is set up to do. So let me turn it over to
Ms. Freeman. Ms. Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and Representative Brindley. I'll also, if I leave something out, and David Maeda, our elections director, is on as well. So if I leave something out, he could chime in after me as well. So on the polling location question, I think what Representative Grayman listed were a few ideas of things. Also, as election equipment is updated and changed, the way that equipment is transported securely to the polling locations might need to change too for counties and cities and even townships, but townships are usually get to be right in their town hall if they have one. So with some of those equipment updates come potential changes that might need to be made around how that equipment is securely transported to and from polling locations. Things like ensuring that more things beyond just the voting tabulators have seals on them, such as AutoMarks already have the seals on them, those assisted voting devices, our poll pads have seals on them, and there could be other ideas that I'm not thinking of. As far as security for county offices, I know there are certainly county offices like your county, like you described, where it's incorporated in with a courthouse and there is that security at entrance points. I know, for example, Washington County, those two entrances were separated. And so there is restricted access back to offices and things like that. But depending on the size of the county, and as well as thinking about cities and townships as well, that might have smaller buildings or just a little bit of room within their building for their election supplies, this could give some funds for them to, like we said, maybe their office work area is locked behind it, but they might want to segregate the elections equipment from other employees and other, you know, city business or other county business. And that's what that cage, that's what that sort of creating a separate area with an additional lock kind of can help limit access to just election staff and those in that process. So some of it is redundancy and some of it is just helping to sort of segregate out who might have direct access to machines, ballots, and other materials.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman. I think I understand the theory of the bill, and I understand the concept, and I like the concept. My concern is that I'm afraid your testifiers are not strengthening your case. I'm hearing a ton of mites and maybes, and this we could do this or maybe this, and I apologize for not noting who said it, but in the beginning, we were told that there is a survey that has gone out to counties to assess this situation, and it seems like perhaps this bill is just not ripe. It seems like we could use additional information to know really what actually is needed and where it is actually needed. I just have a lot of concerns about all the mites, all the maybes, maybe this, maybe that, maybe stanchions for line management. It seems like a bill in search of a problem that we haven't quite found yet. And so I'm likely going to be a no on this today, but I hope that we can tighten this up and actually get the data that we need. Like I said, maybe get those surveys back so that we know what we need so that this could be tightened up and make a little bit more sense moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, I thought I heard something about part of this could go towards training for like de-escalation and et cetera. Did I hear correctly?
Representative Quam, I believe that's been said multiple times, yes, that part of the training that is now offered and not eligibly offered has to do with de-escalation, and that is one thing that Mr. Stolberger has talked about couple of times. Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure that in that training that they also include areas that talk about, you know, wearing stuff for electioneering. That's gone overzealous. In fact, Minnesota lost a U.S. Supreme Court decision about our overzealous enforcement of, you know, you can have a T-shirt that said, you know, pro-Second Amendment on it because they interpreted that would be electioneering, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, you're incorrect. So I hope that we make sure that we train the election workers to not, you know, not go overboard on some of that. Plus, I was wondering if the author could enlighten me. I noticed that there's a base in additional funding. Is that additional funding because of concerns for certain locations which have had in recent years, you know, rioting and burning down businesses, that they're concerned that there would be continued unruly activity in those locations?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kwong, excuse me. You know, when we talk about the trainings, to your first point, that those trainings and the current training on election law reflects the current legal parameters. And so just to that, I think that we also need to talk about and should think about how we equip our election judges and chief election judge to ensure that everybody, to your point, feel safe and comfortable exercising that right. As it relates to the reason that it is set up the way it is to ensure that every county has a base amount of funding. And again, we're talking about $30,000 to respond to their needs. You know, I believe that we need to listen to the counties and the cities and their needs. They're the best folks. And to the point about why we need to do this now, you know, when we talk about, and the reason we're doing a grant program is, you know, we are currently in the legislative session, then we got out of the legislative session. This is $5 million when we have a $9 billion surplus. And this allows the counties and the local jurisdictions to assess what they need and then ask and apply for the grant as part of that needs assessment. So, Representative Kwong, I think that each county and jurisdiction will decide and ask for the resources that they need locally.
I see Representative Kwong took his hand down. Representative Drazkowski, and then I have Representative Elkins, and then we'll get to a vote. Representative Drazkowski. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was driving. I had to pull over, Mr. Chair.
That's understand.
Thank you. So I'm really struggling with this discussion. I mean, over and over, the questions have been asked, where is the problem here? Is anybody in this meeting aware of any ballot boxes that have been stolen or election equipment that has been stolen or damaged? By people who intend to do so?
Mr. Chair.
Representative, it sounds, looks like he might have frozen.
I'm here, Mr. Chair.
No, oh, okay. Just you stopped moving and it looked like you.
It's a long pregnant clause. Apparently, there's no answer.
Well, no, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, and I think Representative Drazkowski, for the same reason that we put locks on our doors and we provide that security, we are proactively saying that we have the resources and we should ensure that our elections administration can be secure, can have all of the things that gives both voters and the public confidence. And that's what this is really about.
Representative Drazkowski.
My head's still spinning from that response, Mr. Chair. The answer is no. That's what I heard from Representative Greenman. No, we're not aware of any problems with this particular area. By the way, Mr. Chair, government's fully funded. in case we forgot, government's fully funded through June 30th of 2023. The Secretary of State received their allocation last year for the full biennium. I assume there, I can't remember specifically, but there was likely an increase in there. Government continues to grow so quickly. But I appreciate the Democrats thinking about election integrity, or at least making what appears to be an obligatory swing at election integrity, because the people of Minnesota have said loud and clear our elections integrity is weak in this state, and we know that. But this is the wrong place to be looking. The response from the Democrats is deafening to me. We go to spend money on something that doesn't need money spent on it. That's what we've just heard. There's no problem with the security of our ballot boxes, with the security of the elections equipment, with the security, apparently, of the buildings. I mean, we've got 4,100 precincts or something like that around the state. Maybe the Secretary of State's person could remind us what that number is. And we haven't had problems with these particular categories. The problem is that we have the ability for people to vouch. We have people walking around Minneapolis harvesting ballots hundreds at a time. That's the security in our elections problem, members. It's not that we need a second and third lock on our door, because the one that we have there is already working. This is recreational spending by the Democrats for them to come forward and try to tell Minnesotans they're doing something about election integrity. They're in the wrong room of the building. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Elkins, and I see Representative, I'll let Representative Nash wrap up. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to say, I am so glad that these meetings are recorded, because I would never have imagined, judging the from the correspondence I get in my email inbox, not from my own constituents, but from Representative Drazkowski's constituents, about how the voting machines were tampered with, questioning the integrity of our volunteer election judges. My head is about to explode. These are going to be mostly comments, but I will ask that, Mr. Stahlberger or Ms. Freeman.
We have another bill, Representative Elkins, so if you can make them quick, we can
make
the other bill.
So whenever we have, a grant program like this, and I'm glad that Representative Nash brought up the HABA program, because I did follow how that money was spent fairly closely, talking with a minute with the Secretary of State's office, with the Minnesota County Technology Leadership Association, and the lion's share of the HABA money did go to cybersecurity, a fact that Representative Nash will very well appreciate. But the events of the 2020 election, revealed a whole host of new problems that election officials now have to approach. And if we're going to be accused of not maintaining the integrity of the voting equipment, then people perceive that that's a problem. We need to address it. If election workers, in the wake of the 2020 election, are feeling physically threatened by behavior at the polls and need training to address that, it needs to be addressed. In the 2020 election, I know that the Bloomington Police Department had to be put high alert to respond to 911 calls coming from polling places because of the fear of disruptive behavior at the polls. And the last point I'd like to make is that usually whenever we have a grant program like this, the lion's share of the money ends up going to where the needs are, which are our smaller, more vulnerable counties. Hennepin County is not going to need a lot of money for this. Neither is Carver County or Olmsted County. It's going to go to Blue Earth and Polk and Kitson, where election workers are in aging facilities and don't have the resources to apply this additional level of security. So the fact that my Republican colleagues are poised to vote against a bill that addresses concerns that their partisans are voicing to us is mind-boggling to me. Thank you.
In a lot of ways, perception is reality, and sometimes it's a perception out there that things are worse than they are. Representative Nash, you can wrap up for
as the lead. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Creeman, I do appreciate the fact that you stopped by the office. I expressed a lot of my concerns. I still don't view this as something that we need to do. I know that a lot of the funding that has gone out from HAVA did go specifically to handle this. I like Representative New Brindley, I do appreciate some of the sentiment and think that it's, as Representative Kosnick said, a good conversation. But I wanted to go back to what Representative Mason said, which was by her observation, everything was fine. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll be voting no and would encourage everyone to vote no.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Greenman, a very short wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will keep it short. I hope that folks would join me in voting yes for to ensure that all of our local jurisdictions have the resources they need to provide safe and secure elections. Thank you.
And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 3870 be referred to the Ways, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Brinks, please take the roll.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, no.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Drazkowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski votes aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Klom.
No.
Klom votes nay. Representative Mason. Chair, with
there we go. Representative Mason, go ahead.
Okay, Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Chair, with a vote of 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to Ways and Means. The next bill we have on our agenda, and members, I intend to vote on this before we adjourn, so we'll go up until just before 10 o'clock, and then we will take a vote on this. So, members, I move House File 3666 be referred to the Judiciary Committee. And Representative Riemann, I see you also have an amendment. You want to move your amendment and explain it?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an amendment that came with feedback from when I got feedback from both counties and the Secretary of State, and it's to put the bill in the shape I'd like it. So I'd ask for vote yes.
Representative Greenman moves the A2 amendment to put the bill in the shape that she wishes. Everybody want to unmute? All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill's in the shape the author wants. Please explain your bill, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. And I think we've already started the conversation, and so I'm going to try to keep it brief. But this House File 3666 is a bill that really reflects our proud tradition of strong and trusted local elections administration. Every cycle, we have 30,000 of our neighbors and our friends and our family in every country, in every county in the state, community in the state, pitch in to prepare and staff our polling places, grab absentee ballots, process ballots, canvass the results. And for many, it's just a small portion of the year. For some public servants, it's part of their job serving our county and city year round. In 2020, we saw these heroic efforts as folks put their health on the lines in some cases to ensure that communities had safe, accessible, and well-run elections. These election workers didn't ask for thanks or recognition. They stepped up for their civic duty, and for that, we're all grateful. Many of these Minnesotans are the same election workers who've done this work in their community for years, year in and year out, working quietly in the background, efficiently doing their jobs. It's not glamorous, but it's a critical one for our democracy. These are the private citizens who are doing the apolitical work of conducting an election, But unfortunately, as you talked about in the last couple of years, there's been an increasingly tense political environment, aggressive rhetoric, and social media that has really involuntarily thrust many of these men and women into the public spotlight. It's happening around the country, and it's happening here in Minnesota. Social media, heated rhetoric, irresponsible and misplaced targeting of these local public servants has all contributed to this increasing fear and insecurity. In some cases, these election workers have been directly targeted with death threats. So we have not seen that here in Minnesota, except for at the highest levels. But we have seen credible death threats threatening municipal clerks in Madison, the executive director of the Milwaukee Election Commission. In Philadelphia, three city commissioners and another election official received dozens of death threats targeting their family and their kids. The Secretary of State in Georgia received so many threats and credible that they had to take precautions, including using a remote start because of bomb threats. These are just the most severe cases. And across the country, we're seeing examples like that that have impacted the men and women. We are seeing how it's affecting their morale too. And I think we heard a little bit about that. In a 2021 survey of elections officials, nearly one in three local elections officials said they felt unsafe because of their job. One in six workers reported that they've received threats. This increasingly tense environment, focusing on and targeting elections officials has led to an increase of verbal and physical threats, harassment, and intimidation just for doing their job. We're grateful here in Minnesota that election workers have not received some of the same credible threats of intimidation that we've seen in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Colorado, and many other places. But we know that that some of that has happened to our Secretary of State and Secretary of States across the country. And when that happens, it is often trickled down. Unfortunately, this is a problem that's only growing, and it's leading to increasing anxiety in tens of thousands of Minnesotans who serve as elections officials. In the 2021 cycle, we saw an uptick of retirements of election administrators and continued shortages of election judges. Here in Minnesota, we have the opportunity to act together to show our elections officials that this conduct, threats, interference, intimidation is unacceptable. We have the act, we can protect together this type of inappropriate and unacceptable behavior. This bill does that. It protects the sacred work of conducting our elections by protecting from intimidation, like death threats and other physical threats of violence or coercion, from protecting from interference, like blocking access to the polling places and efforts to gain unauthorized entry. And it protects from elections officials from doxing that could lead to unauthorized disclosure of their personal information. It builds on language from Minnesota statutes already on the books to protect voters, other public servants, and other important legal processes. I solicited the feedback of local elections folks, the prosecutors, of national experts, other members, and the Secretary of State to tailor the remedies to protect election workers and prohibit this conduct. These are the folks who sign up. They don't ask for much, but I think that this is a way to show that that we have their back. With that, Mr. Chair, a few testifiers.
I have three testifiers on my list. Mr. Jared Davidson, please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, members. My name is Jared Davidson, and I'm an attorney with the nonprofit cross-partisan legal and advocacy organization Protect Democracy, where my work focuses on ensuring that America's elections are free, fair, and secure. It's an honor to be with you all today. I appreciate this opportunity to appear before you to shed light on the ongoing and pervasive threats of violence and intimidation targeting America's election officials and the urgent need for the Minnesota legislature to pass House File 3666 in order to combat this menace to our democracy. America's election officials, from local administrators to secretaries of state to volunteer poll workers, perform the most fundamental public service to our democracy, ensuring that our elections are free, fair, and secure. Unfortunately, across the country, election workers are facing an unprecedented surge in threats of violence and intimidation against not only themselves and their staffs, but also their families. In the past year alone, there have been well over 800 documented threats of violence against election officials in this country. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. And unfortunately, this wave of threats has led in turn to a commensurate wave of resignations of qualified election officials across the country. This amounts to an existential threat to the core functioning of American democracy, because we need these seasoned, experienced professionals to run our elections properly and free from intimidation and influence. Critically, election officials are being subjected to these threats and intimidation regardless of their political party. This is an urgent bipartisan issue that demands an equally urgent and bipartisan response. Indeed, just yesterday, the Oregon legislature, with broad bipartisan support, passed legislation similar to this to expand protections for election workers. And they did so nearly unanimously. There was only a single no vote. House File 3666 sets forth a common sense and effective framework to combat intimidation facing election officials. By creating both criminal and civil penalties, the bill is tailored to ensure potent deterrence and to provide election officials with a range of legal remedies to protect themselves, their staffs, and their families. And crucially, the bill is targeted to prohibit threats that specifically seek to influence how an election official is performing their official duties. These kinds of threats against election officials for merely doing their solemn jobs are threats to democracy itself. House File 3666 is therefore an important step to protecting, not only to protecting election officials in Minnesota, but also democracy in this state. I urge your support of this bill, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
The next person I have on my list is Mr. Brent Olson. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Olson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Brent Olson. I'm a commissioner from Big Stone County. I've been a county commissioner for 17 years. My father was a township clerk for over 40. My grandfather was a township clerk for over 40 years. And now that I think about it, my great-grandfather was a township officer as well. But since there probably weren't many more than five people in the township at that time, he didn't have much of a choice. I say this just so you'll know that my statement comes from a place of well over a century of commitment to Minnesota elections and elections. Faith and participation in our state and nation's elections are the lifeblood of any functioning democracy. Without confidence in the system, citizens won't respect outcomes, and without individuals participating as election poll workers, judges, and volunteers, our systems to run democracy crumble. Minnesotans have a strong history of transparent, professionally run elections. They should be proud. At the same time, we can all acknowledge that this confidence can't be taken for granted, and that we must always be searching for ways to educate the public and bolster confidence in our system. There is no doubt that the heightened politicization of elections has had adverse effects throughout our country, even in Minnesota. As elected county commissioners who, for the most part, serve as nonpartisan officers, we know the strengths of keeping politics out of the core election systems that underpin our society and democracy. Frankly, we yearn for a time when election administration and election news was boring. We also see the dangers of when those systems are damaged or unnecessarily attacked. As such, it is incumbent on all of us to place a renewed emphasis on increasing voter confidence, educating the public, and increasing our system security as well. In my humble opinion, the best way for that to happen is for folks to see the process firsthand. And to that extent, I want to thank the committee for hearing and discussing these two bills today that, generally speaking, would provide local governments with increased abilities to train and protect the vital workers and volunteers who make our elections possible. It is my fervent belief that if we can keep the people engaged and active participants in our democratic system, we can have hope that it will sustain itself. thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. The next person I have on my list is Mr. David Maeda. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Maeda. I'm the Director of Elections for the Minnesota Secretary of State's office, and I'll keep my comments brief because I thought Representative Greenman covered a lot of what I was going to say very effectively. I administered my first election in 1996. I was the Washington County election supervisor at the time. It was a state primary presidential election that year. And I'll say the things that kept me up back then were things like running out of ballots, having a mistake on a ballot or a misprint that we would have to redo the ballots, voting equipment going down in a polling place on election day, election judges not showing up on election day. Those things still are in place and keep me up at night still, but I never thought I would get to a position in my career where physical threats against myself and my colleagues are in play. Last month, I sat in on a meeting with the Department of Justice and the FBI, who has created a task force on this very issue of reporting and investigating threats against election officials across the country. Both Attorney General Garland and FBI Director Wray were on the call, emphasizing how important they see this issue. Last week, I attended the National Association of State Election Directors Winter Conference, where I got to hear from my colleagues across the country just the demoralizing state of things on this environment we're trying to operate election administration in. There are well-respected colleagues in neighboring states who are afraid to travel in their states because of this environment we're in. The physical threats that many are getting is just, it's really demoralizing, I'll say. To the previous bill, there was some talk about retention and recruitment of election judges. I did, previous to being appointed to this position, I was a Minnetonka city clerk, so I'm in touch with my colleagues in Minnetonka, and they admitted administering the election in 2021 was even worse than 2020, and part of that was many of the really good election judges in the city decided enough is enough, they don't want to serve anymore, and I think this bill is not going to solve the underlying problem, but it is a tool in the toolbox, and it definitely is a step in the right direction. And I would strongly encourage support of this bill. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Maeda. Representative Koznick.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I know we're running short on time, but it looks like the committee has a few questions. As I do, I was wondering if the author could discuss line 2.28, where it talks about knowingly make false allegations and how that would be enforced. Go with that for now.
Yeah, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Answer as possible.
That provision was actually eliminated with the amendment.
Representative Koznick.
That's good to hear. I am having a hard time technically getting the amendments up today for committee, but good to hear, because that seemed pretty rather vague, but I think your previous testifier statement that this is not going to solve the underlying problems is important. But to the author, I think you're also missing an important component that this bill could use some more work. Talk about, you know, this is for the election judges, and I appreciate what they do. I think we, from our side of the aisle, we're well underrepresented in having election judges, and those that are concerned about election integrity, I make the plea that they need to help us get involved and secure that. And so the role of the election judge, I share with you the critical importance of it. But can you discuss why in this bill it doesn't talk about the actual voter intimidation? I've heard in polling places that certain voters that are probably in the minority position in a particular precinct will sit and basically squat in a polling place to create longer lines, try to run out the clock, and so that people get more frustrated and they eat up the clock in the ballot box. Why is the voter intimidation not included in this, and this is just for elections judges?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kosnick, I have good news. I have a bill that deals with voter intimidation that I would love to work with you on, because I agree. This is specifically addressing the role that in its elections officials, both we heard from some, right, folks who are the public servants who are administering our elections, the election judges, the volunteers. And I thought it was really important to respond directly to protecting them in their performance of the official duties. And so I'd love to work with you on the other piece, but I think that this is tailored just for that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Kosnick.
To the author, I'd appreciate the opportunity to take a look at that. I think these need to be done together before I could support this. But I also have concerns about the Attorney General's office enforcing some of this stuff. So a little bit of concern there, but I'd like to work with you on the other bill. And again, as the previous testifier had stated, that this particular bill doesn't solve the whole underlying problem. And so I think we have some more work to do, but I look forward to working with you on your other bill. Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the author please enlighten how this might affect the poll watcher observer challenger that we have built in our system?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, if you look at the definition of elections officials, it doesn't apply to those other folks. It applies to election, a canvassing board, a municipal auditor or clerk, a volunteer, an election judge, all of those folks who are obligated and part of that process.
Mr. Chair, I was specifically querying in the impeding of an election worker. The poll challenger watcher observer is one that's there to raise questions and maybe object to something that might be happening, and that could be interpreted as impeding. Is there any excusing of that activity, which is longstanding, from being interpreted as impeding?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those folks I think we're talking about are legally obligated to be in the polling place. So as long as they're doing their work, that wouldn't be interpreted as interfering or preventing an election official from their performance of their duties. So I don't see any concern. I know that they play a role. It's in our statute. So I'm not concerned about that. Thank you, Mr. Quam.
Representative Quam.
Thank you. I wish I had the same, confidence that it wasn't. What about the situation of where someone vocally stops an election judge and tells them that by state law, they have to have this function performed by two election judges? I'm trying to understand the definition or where the line is drawn for impeding election workers.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what's important and really the limiting factor here is it has to be intentional. So you have to intentionally interfere or hinder or prevent an election official for the purpose of. And what that means is if they're raising questions that are sort of as part of the process, that would not be considered intentionally impeding or preventing or interfering.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is the bill is using civil action where reasonable person standard is utilized, so intent would not come into that as being needed.
And Representative Quam, that because of that, this bill is going to the Judiciary Committee, those issues are under their purview in the Judiciary Committee. Representative Quam.
Well, the example of a person bringing that up who was asked to leave the polling, leave, is that, I'm trying to understand if that would be a problem. Well, no, Mr. Chair, we really need to understand the implications of the specifics of the bill. And if we can't get clarified, you're silencing us trying to find out the particulars and the intent of the author And that, I believe, is wrong. I'm ready to come back tonight if we need more time to actually get answers and clarifications of the intent of the author, if the chair is so inclined to stop that effort.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. It actually relates a little bit to the question that Representative Quam asked and the answer that was given. So Representative Greenman notes that in line 2.11, it has to be with the intent to influence. However, in the very next section on lines 2.15 and 2.16, we specifically exclude intent as a requirement for legal action, which is a little unusual and onerous. In much legal action, intent actually is an important part of legal action, of criminal activity. And so while on the one hand, it says that the intimidation has to be with the intent to influence, however, civil action, you don't have to prove any intent. And that's really concerning to me. I think that's pretty onerous that it was very specifically excluded from the language. I think that this is not ready for prime time. This definitely needs some further work.
Representative Brindley, again, that would be a question that it's falls under the purview of the Judiciary Committee. And members, it's 10:01. We're going to lay this bill over for now, and we're going to come back one evening next week and finish this up, but we don't have a time scheduled for tonight. So members, we're going to lay this bill over, and we have a meeting next Tuesday. We have bills on the committee that day. So with that, members, for today, we are adjourned.